Introducing Rabbi Yishuv Grunstein, 9:21 on a Wednesday morning, as we go through how does it work, Rabbi Halacha, and our topic will be today, is it reality versus halachic reality?
Yes.
What is the reality?
So, gentlemen, unfortunately, last week I had, and I'm still suffering from bronchitis in my vocal cords, so therefore I hope everyone can hear me. I'll do my best to speak. One of the worst...
I'm too close to you.
Thank you. One of the worst curses that any rabbi can have is when you take away his ability to speak. Then that is the biggest curse he can ever have. Because that's what rabbis love to do. And even with the hand motions, it doesn't help us. What I wanted to speak about today, the topic that we're dealing with here about how halacha works, is the following. Is the reality and the halachic reality the same or not? In other words, when we look at something purple, do we say it's purple, and it's purple halachically? Or do we say, no, it's purple in reality, but halachically we don't consider it purple? In other words, is there a reality out there, but there's another halachic reality? And I'm going to suggest that the answer is yes. Reality means what you see with your two eyes. This is purple, he's my son, she's my daughter, that's reality. Halachic reality is what Jewish law allows you or doesn't allow you to do, or how Jewish law tells you to act with that reality. So let's start right from the beginning. I made a little chart here, but ultimately we can go through it. Let's start right at the beginning, in other words, at the end. Bottom of the page. I wrote, Ein Sfeika D'Yoma. You look now and you want to know, when is Pesach? So, anyone want to look on their phones, when is Pesach this year? The 19th of April at night. When is Pesach in 5 years from now? Little Google, within around 40 seconds we'll have an answer. Good. Is there any doubt when Pesach comes out?
No.
So why are they celebrating 2 days outside of Israel?
Masorah.
So once upon a time there was Sfeika D'Yoma, meaning we didn't know which day Pesach came out. Because every month in the Jewish calendar can either be 30 days plus 15 equals Pesach, or 29 days plus 15 equals Pesach. We didn't know because they sanctified the month in Jerusalem. The message didn't get to the diaspora on time. So they celebrated both days because they had a doubt. Because the halachic reality is, we didn't know. The reality is, we don't know. So the halacha says, okay, when you don't know, it's a biblical prohibition to do malacha on the first day of Pesach. And there's obligations like eating matzah, etc. So do 2 days. We don't have any doubt today, but the halacha still tells you to do 2 days. Why? Long story. Gemara and Beitza, Daf Dalet said, maybe we'll go back to that again, and we'll make the same mistake again. Whatever it might be. But no one can today come up and say, we do 2 days because we don't know when Pesach is. But rather, what should be the authentic statement you make? We do 2 days because that's what Jewish law prescribes. There were historic reasons, whatever. But today, in the year 2019, you say, ultimately, we do 2 days because that's what Jewish law prescribes and obligates.
Would that be a better question on Shavuot? Because we're counting 49 days. Mm-hmm. So we know for sure, there's no doubt, when the 50th day hits.
Shavuot is an excellent proof for what I'm saying. The Rambam brings up your question. He says, how come on Shavuot we do 2 days? After all, by the time Shavuot rolls around, the message got to the diaspora as to when Pesach was. So just add 49 days from the second day of Pesach, you get to Shavuot. So there is no doubt, and there wasn't a doubt.
But your question is really too
narrow. And what was his answer?
Because it's the beginning of the month that we're worried about.
And what was the, 1 second, what was the Rambam's answer?
That it's not Mishum
lo pluk. You're right. Reality, there's no reason for 2 days. Mm-hmm. Especially on Shavuot. But because we didn't want to differentiate between all the Yomim Tovim and Shavuos, so we kept 2 days on Shavuos. So again, reality versus halachic.
Are we more lenient on the centuries as a result of that? That
more lenient.
Does it lead to
the
more...
The Chatam Sofer has a very interesting tshuva, says because the second day of Shavuos was never a doubt, but rather it was done out of what he calls the Gzera Derabanan, namely a real enactment, it's more chamor. And he says the nafkamina would be, you couldn't bury on the second day of Yom Tov as you would in every other. Yes, the wiser had a question. That's fine. Whenever you remember. That's fine.
Yes, I could.
All right, we'll wait a few minutes. We'll get the question.
Back in 1926, there's one rabbi got together. They wanted to do away with all 2 days. Second day, all young people.
Yeah.
They're discussing whether they do away with it. Mm-hmm. But before they were able to do it, the conservative Jews came out and they do away with it was 1 day. So because they did it, they didn't want to do it. It doesn't make any sense that one's got nothing to do with the other. But
again, it doesn't make sense when you say reality says otherwise, but when you say there's a halachic reality and there's a reality and those two don't necessarily go together. I'll just give one more example. You look at someone that wears a kippah, has tzitzit sticking out, and they daven like you've never seen someone daven before. And they keep Shabbos, and they don't hold from the Eruv, and they speak against this rabbi, and they hold from this rabbi. They do everything Jews do. They look Jewish, they seem Jewish. Are they Jewish?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course, based on what? On their looks?
Well, that's not how they daven and everything else.
If you go up to that person, and you say one thing, your mother Jewish, and he says, no. Is he Jewish?
Have you converted?
Second question, did you convert? He says, no. Is he Jewish?
Well, today, no.
What do you mean today, no? Is he Jewish?
Today,
I think he is.
He is not Jewish. Is he close to the Jewish people? Yes. Does he look like a Jew? Yes. Realistically, this person looks more Jewish than everyone else in the room. But the halachic reality says either you're born to a Jewish mother or you converted. That's a Jew. So again, if you look on the page where I said in the first example, Nir'ah Yehudi, he looks like a Jew. That's my looks. That's realistically. That's what a Jew looks like. By the way, the Gemara does say that if someone comes along and says, I'm Jewish, you should believe him. Right. Now that plays out today is a different story. But if you ask him those two questions and the answer is no, he's not Jewish. So again, the halachic reality is not necessarily the reality. The reality is the guy looks Jewish, the guy's playing the Jewish game together with us. But he's not Jewish.
You know, if he tells you,
Afkamina, can you count him for a minion? Can you give him an aliyah, etc.? Yeah.
If he tells you his mother's not Jewish, but there's a... You know, but her mother was Jewish. But
all right,
my mother's
say
not.
The Gemara. You all know the answer. I'm just giving that. Yes, Mr.
I don't... You were talking before. I'm thinking before about Chutzlaretz, and they do this, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Why, if somebody comes for Pesach, let's say for Pesach, why does he keep 2 days?
Where?
In Israel.
We'll have to give a proper class on 2 days versus 1 day and why in Israel. We can't do that now. I'm not going to do justice to that.
For myself, when I came to Israel, I followed the
You're on solid ground. On the other hand, I can't do justice now. That's a whole class into itself.
No,
how halacha works and what happens when you go from there to here.
We'll
get to it as time goes on. But right now, if I answer it, it's not going to do justice. It really isn't. It's a fascinating topic. But let's go further. Let's look at another issue. Meat and milk. Forbidden?
Together.
Very good. So, if a person says to me, I had chicken soup and I poured in milk. Forbidden?
Yes, forbidden. Rabbinically.
Realistically, is there milk and meat together?
No.
No, everyone said no. That's interesting. I said to you, I poured in milk into
how
the chicken
milk?
Soup.
Chicken
is milk? Is there milk and meat together? You're all becoming these mipalpalim. You're becoming lamganim. This is beautiful. I'm asking a simple question. Okay?
Right.
Is this a phone?
Maybe.
Yes. Thank you. Is there milk and meat in that pot?
Yes.
Yes. Now that's the reality. Now let's ask the halachic reality. Can I eat it? Now answer your question. Now give me all your answers.
Depends on how much
milk went in. Batal b'shishim, batal b'ro, batal this, batal that.
Were you pregnant and said you need it?
what?
Were you pregnant and said you need it?
Pregnant and you said you need it.
And the doctor says,
so once again, no one's going to dispute the fact that there's milk and meat together. That's a given. But the halachic reality tells you how to act. It doesn't say this is the reality. There is milk and meat in there. And it could be. You're allowed to eat it in that situation. For whatever reasons, we have all the reasons in the world. People get smicha because of that. They didn't have smicha test to talk about. Let's talk about another issue. Let's go from a rabbinic, from a biblical prohibition of milk and meat. Let's go down a notch, okay? Even though I said chicken and milk, which is already rabbinic.
All right, all right.
Let's go down a notch, okay? Bishul Aklam. You know what Bishul Aklam is?
Mm-hmm. Cooked by a non-Jew.
A non-Jew cooks you kosher food. Is the food kosher?
Well, Sfardim says certainly not.
Maybe Sfardim says certainly not. Where are you getting this from? Is the food kosher?
The food, the food itself is kosher.
Somebody watches
the food itself is kosher.
Here is the situation. He took a kosher parv pot. He put in parv popcorn. He fried it up or popped it up with kosher oil. And he served it to you. Is the food kosher?
Yes.
Yes. That's answer number one. Yes. Answer number two. Are you allowed to eat it?
Yeah, of course. Yes.
It depends.
We have an iser called Bishul Aklam. The rabbis made a gezera, made an enactment, that you're not allowed to eat food that was cooked by a non-Jew because it would become hubby-dubby with them and it will lead to intermarriage. So therefore, today, food cooked by a non-Jew could be as kosher as can be, and no one's disputing that it's kosher. You can't eat it. Okay.
I can.
Then they come along and they say, wait a minute, that's only with food that if you eat it, you're really going to say, thank you so much. But popcorn is called lo ole al shulchan melachim. One of the caveats that the rabbis put in to Bishul Aklam, food cooked by a non-Jew, is that if it's not befit to a king's table, you're allowed to eat it. It has to be good food. Steak, potatoes, etc. It can't be junky food. So, from that perspective, it could very well be that this food can be eaten. On the other hand, rice, kosher rice, cooked in a kosher pot by a non-Jew. Is the rice kosher?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Can you eat it? No! Why? Because you can't eat rice raw, and he cooked it up. You know how to eat it?
Are these things a machloket?
It's not machloket. What I'm trying to say is, Bishul Aklam is forbidden. However, Bishul Aklam means food cooked by a non-Jew. The food is kosher. You can't eat it. Except for circumstances that we just mentioned. There's a few more. Yes.
Oh, but somebody is you have somebody that helps you.
Well, I thought the one is these exceptions.
There is an interesting point of view that's brought in Shulchan Aruch, sort of rejected, but we do rely on it when needed, and that is as follows. That if you have a shivcha b'vayit Yehudi, if you have a maidservant in a Jewish home, then you're allowed to eat the food that she made.
Or
he made. Why? Because there's no fear that you're going to marry your maidservant. Now, the question is today, when you have a Philippine worker, which is not a maidservant, it's a worker, does that apply or not? So that is a difference of opinion. But, again, when we talk about these questions, you have to go in order. And this is the way Jewish law works. Number one, realistically, what are we looking at? We're looking at kosher food. Two, are you allowed to eat it? Three, are there exceptions to the rule? That's fine. But don't mix up reality with Jewish reality. In other words, if you go ahead and you say on Shabbos that kol shlishi, if you pour water from your kettle into a cup and from there to another cup, and into that cup you paskin, you can put in tea and you can put in coffee and whatever you'd like. Don't come and say, and therefore the cup is not hot. What do you mean the cup is not hot? It's boiling hot. I see the things coming up from it. The steam is coming up. It's hot. Realistically, it's hot. Am I allowed to put tea in there? Does that constitute cooking for Shabbos? Maybe not. But don't mix up reality with halachic reality. Halachic reality is what a Jew is allowed or not allowed to do. Yeah.
In restaurants outside of Eretz Yisrael, because in Eretz Yisrael, Muslims are Jews, But you have cooks that are non-Jewish, but you have mashkichim. You have mashkich tamidi. And they cook steaks and other food, and it's under hashkafa. So technically you have bishul akum, but if a Jew turns on the pilot light,
correct,
then it's...
Harold's correct. That's that with regard to bishul akum, once again, the food is kosher, 100% kosher. Number two, you're not allowed to eat it. Number three, if a Jew puts on the fire, the Rama says that's good enough, he's involved in the cooking, it's no longer bishul akum. The Shulchan Aruch, that's the Rama. Again, I don't like to say Ashkenaz Sparta anymore because many Ashkenazim paskin like Spartan, Spartan like Ashkenazim, because what you have been brought up, and me too, has been said, is that Shulchan Aruch is for the Sfardim, and the Rama is for the Ashkenazim, which is true most of the time. But there's many exceptions to the rule, and around this table we've already mentioned Duchening every day, Kiddush and Shul Friday night, and the examples go on and on and on. So make a long story short, the Shulchan Aruch says that you have to be involved in the cooking, which means you got to put it on the fire, and you got to be involved. And the Rama said it's good enough to put on the fire. You put on the pilot light in the morning, good enough for the rest of the day. Okay, you put one Yahrzeit candle in the kitchen, and they light from that, and then everything's great. Wonderful. Now, that's a law within Bishul Akum, and no one's going to dispute the fact that any way you slice it, the food is kosher. The question is, are you allowed to eat it? Now, in between those two extremes, there's a middle question, and this is a whole class into itself. When you have a rabbinic prohibition, where you say, realistically, the food is kosher, but the rabbi said not to eat it, does it treif up the pot? Think about it. Don't answer. That is a big machloket. Yeah.
Did halakhic reality at one time, do you think, reflected the opinion of the rabbis as reality?
No.
I mean, they always knew there was an idea that it's not really reality, but we're creating a rule, or did they, you know, for them, in their science of the time, or whatever it is, that's reality?
No.
I mean, they always knew all along that it's...
Rav Soloveitchik was famous in saying, in a famous talk on Parshat Korach, that halacha, like every science, has its own discipline. In other words, just like in science, you can't say, why did the apple fall off the tree? Well, the tree had too much weight, and it got very heavy, so you empty your pockets, so emptied his pockets. That sounds very logical. What's the real scientific answer? State in one word, it starts with a G.
Gravity.
Gravity, thank you. So Rav Soloveitchik said the same thing is true in halacha. In other words, your reality is what you say. My reality is that this is purple and this is a phone and that's a cup of water. The halachic reality functions within its own independent discipline. And therefore, we have to ask ourselves every time we deal with a halachic question, what is the reality? Question number one. And question number two, what does the halacha have to say about it? And let's take another example. You're not allowed to carry on Shabbos in the public domain? Yes, you're not allowed to carry from a private domain to a public domain, vice versa as well. And number two is, you're not allowed to go Arba Amot with Rishut HaRabim, not allowed to walk Arba Amot with a key in your pocket in Rishut HaRabim. What's a public domain? If you would have asked me, I don't know anything, I never learned a roof, and what's a public domain? If you would have asked me, realistically, the street, it's the sidewalk, it's everything outside my own home. In other words, it's everything that, if someone walked there, I can't say is trespassing. Right? Now, we go into the laws of a Reuven. Whoops! Do we get complicated? Let's start thinking. Second to last on the page. First of all, they bring in number one, big machloket, almost equal in poskim. Does a public domain have to have 600,000 Jews in it, for it to be, or 600,000 people for that matter, for it to be a public domain or not? Alright, yes, no, and if not, might be a Carmelite, which is a Rishus HaRabim Dirabanan, a rabbinic public domain. Number two, everyone ready? Mifulash l'chol l'koli lo'i kum klal. The Chazon Ish says that a public domain has to be a street that's straight, the main street of the town, doesn't swerve. So let's take our city of Efrat. You come into Efrat, let's take the southern gate, you come in, pretty straight. Then you have a traffic circle. Many posts can say, the minute you have to stop, it's not a public domain. Public domain means you can walk like in the desert, free. Nothing's stopping you. The only thing that can stop you is a camel or a snake that kills you. Other than that, you can walk. Let's move on. Forget about the traffic circle. I can continue. I go over the traffic. I can care less. I'm continuing. What happens with the road?
It turns.
It swerves. Whoops! Says the Chazon Ish. The minute it swerves, it's not a public domain. Now, you should know, the minute you say it's not public domain de'oraisa, you can build an Eruv. You can build an Eruv, you've changed the whole Shabbos reality from one place to another. The whole Shabbos changes. Okay? Many people don't agree with the Chazon Ish. But we already just mentioned, if you would ask me realistically, is the main street of Ephrata public domain? Yes! Anyone can walk on it. You can't stop a person from walking on it. The only person that stops a person from walking on it is a terrorist. Yimach Shemo. That's it! That's reality. Halachic reality, is it a public domain? That's a different question. 600,000, we mentioned. Number two is, does it have to be a straight street? Number three is, does it have to be the main street? Number four is, if there's anything stopping you on the street, and the list goes on and on and on.
Exactly, second with two.
Yes. And again, the halachic reality is not the reality. We sometimes mix up the two. And when we mix up the two, we get into problems that we just can't live with. For example, how many times have you heard from people, usually not religious, why do you need a mikvah? Once upon a time, you couldn't get clean in your house. So you had to go to the bathhouse. That was like a whole day's work. You had to go to the bathhouse to come out of the bathhouse. It was a thing. Right? The Beit HaMerchatz. But today, we got in our own house. We have a bathtub. Why do you need a mikvah? The answer is, of course you can get clean in your house. No one's disputing that. Hygienically, you get clean in your house. What's a mikvah? A mikvah has nothing to do with cleanliness. What does a mikvah have to do with?
Tara.
Tuma. Tatara. Tuma. Tatara. You want to go up to Harabayit? You have to go into a mikvah. Because a mikvah is not a bath. It doesn't come from tap water. A mikvah is connected to the natural water coming either from the rain or from a natural source under the ground. A ma'ayan or rain. So again, if you start saying, realistically, I got in my own house a bathtub. You're right, you got a bathtub. I don't need a bathhouse to get clean. You're right. Am I tamei? Yes. Even though I went into a bath, I'm clean. Yes. Why? Because one doesn't have to do with the other. So again, when we deal with these issues, it's extremely important to have that in mind, because when you start saying things like what I just said, you do damage to the Jewish people. Because how many times have you heard people say the rabbis make up things? I'm looking at the rabbi made up the second day yantiv. The rabbis didn't make up the second day yantiv. They understood that there's no sveka de yom, and they said continue. They knew what the reality was, and they still said continue. Well, let's get into the example.
What's
this
issue
is like
the road
the
bending?
Example. What?
Well, what's the issue with the road bending? Why would that not be?
According to some poskim, and the Chazon Ish was famous on this, he said that when Moshe Rabbeinu was given in this week's parsha, Parshat Bishalach, the laws of carrying. As you know, the man fell on Friday, and a double portion fell for a very simple reason. You can't carry from the public domain, namely the man fell outside your tent, into the private domain, that's your tent. So therefore it fell on Friday so you could bring it in before Shabbos. Everyone got that? Very good. So the many have said, and this makes perfect sense, that God gave the Jewish people that law in the Midbar. A Midbar, a desert, is defined by an open space. If you want a modern open space, the Kremlin Square. The Kremlin Square is an open space. As you know, when the communists were still in power, they made their mass rallies there. There is no swerving, there's nothing. You can walk and walk and walk, just like in the desert. Now, you may die of thirst, but you can walk and walk and walk, nothing stopping you. So many have said, that's a Reshut HaRabim. Anything short of that is not. So let's start talking about our modern cities, or our postmodern cities. First of all, you can walk and walk. There's traffic lights. There's various things that stop you. Number two, there could be swerves in the road. It's not like the desert.
As other pointed out, there's wadis, there's boulders.
Of course
it swerves.
Of course.
There's no such thing as a straight path.
Okay.
There's not a straight path.
Yeah, but I'm saying in the desert, you could walk for whatever it was in the desert. That area that the Jewish people encamped in, at least that square, wherever you go ahead and you make it, that square goes on and on.
We know that? I mean, we don't even know where they were.
We were in various places, but we're saying when they got the laws, as in the desert, we can imagine it was open. Okay, other rabbis dispute it. Makes again. But again, when you start saying reality says otherwise, you're right, reality says otherwise. But halacha works within its own discipline. Now let me give you the example of it. How many people have said to you in their lives, what kind of work is it by putting on a light on Shabbos? The answer is, there is no work. Was it hard work, first of all? Anyone?
No.
Two. Isn't it harder to set the table for Shabbos? Yes. But who said first that we know how to work on Shabbos? Okay, I don't know.
Well,
Country Yossi said it in a song. Okay, ain't gonna work on Saturday. Very nice Country Yossi, go deal with him. But quite frankly, Jewish law never said that. Jewish law said, Sheshit yamim ta'aseh melacha, v'yom ha-shvi'i, you shouldn't do melacha. What's melacha? 39 acts. Whatever those acts are, being hard or easy. One of those acts are very, very easy. What do they call it? Separating. So if I separate, let's say, a nut from a raisin, that could be a melacha on Shabbos. I'm saying could be. If that's the case, that's separation. But there's no work involved. So that's problem number one. So realistically, it's not work. But who said halacha says, you're not allowed to work on Saturday?
Nope.
Number two, when you deal with electricity, indeed, you have to see, what of the 39 melachos does it fit into? And as you know, there was big machlokesis about that. But the minute we start mixing up reality with halachic reality, we get into these problems. But let me give you the example that I love the most. And again, this example is not one that I could say conclusively, no, it's absolutely mutar. According to the Torah, not allowed to eat chadash. Chadash means new wheat that took root after the second day of Pesach. Okay? So that means that that's called chadash. When does it become yashan, old? Going from new to old? No, same thing. On the first day of Pesach. So whatever was took root after the first day of Pesach, be it 2 days after Pesach to 2 days before Pesach, whatever it might be, the minute the second day of Pesach comes, you can eat chadash. Once upon a time you have to bring the korban, called the korban ha'omer. That's why it's called Sfirat ha'omer, incidentally, for those that are sleeping. And ultimately, today, second day of Pesach, got it. That's according to the Torah, according to the Pshat Mishnah, it's nohag even in Chutz La'aretz. Adkan. Now, in Chutz La'aretz, if you say to me, there is a field, I planted it right before Rosh Hashanah, it took root on the second day of Sukkot, is it new wheat realistically? Answer?
No.
Absolutely yes!
Yeah.
Why not?
Oh.
Why not?
I see. Okay.
Why not? We said anything that took root after the second day of Pesach. This is after the second day of Pesach.
Right.
Good. Can I eat it? Well, it's in Chutz La'aretz. That's us, sir. No way to go there. But if it's in a field of a non-Jew, comes to Bach and others and says, maybe it's okay to eat. Maybe the whole Isser of Chadash is only in a field of a Jew. But if it's in a field of a non-Jew, it's okay. So again, realistically, if you ask me, is this new wheat? It is new wheat. Are you allowed to eat it? Don't know. Now, let's say you have a piece of new wheat, or wheat, and you don't know if it was planted before or after the first day, the second day of Pesach. What do we call that? A doubt. What do we do in doubts? The Raisas, the Rabbanans, Sveikas, we start doing things. But again, that's all in the halachic reality. In the world of reality, then ultimately, we say to ourselves, let's see what the reality is. In the world of the halachic reality is how you act. And maybe the best example I can give is the one in the middle of the page, which would probably take me about a year to explain, but I'm going to try to do it in 2 minutes. What is a mamzer? Now, don't think of the realistic mamzer that you called the guy that cut you off on the highway. Don't think of that mamzer that cut you in line. No. That's the modern, postmodern mamzer. What's a mamzer? According to the Torah, a mamzer.
It's the offspring of a relationship where there could not be kedushin.
Very good. It's an offspring of a relationship in which there couldn't be kiddushin, and if they did get married, it's a riot.
Right.
So, for sake of argument, a woman that was married to Shimon, didn't get a get from Shimon, slept with Levi, got pregnant, had a baby boy. We don't even need to wait to the priest for the big name. We don't have to wait to hear what they're going to give him at the name. He's a Jewish baby, but we don't have to wait for the name. We know the name. What's the name?
Mamzer.
Mamzer. Very good. Is this baby a mamzer? Yes. Halachically, is the baby a mamzer?
Yes.
So again, DNA testing, the baby's a mamzer. We know exactly the father, the mother, the baby's a mamzer. That's okay. He was created by Levi and by this woman, not by Shimon, the one that's married to her, Jewishly. But we have halachic rules. Number one is rov bilot etzel habaal. If a woman sleeps around, the majority of the time she's sleeping is with her husband. That's rov. That's a majority. Number two, a woman comes and says, I slept with Levi. Halacha says, Ein adam asim atzmo rasha. A person doesn't make himself into a rasha. We go on and on and on. If you read any tshuva about a heter mamzerut from Rav Moshe Feinstein, going back, you'll start saying, what is he talking about? The woman came along and said, I did this. And yet you come along and you find the rabbis come and say, yes, we know the reality. The halachic reality, on the other hand, can be different from the real reality. From the real reality. There's a reality and there's a halachic reality. And when we get them mixed up, we do damage. We do damage to halacha, or we do damage to our image. Because when we start saying things dumb, like, the soup is not hot, and even though there's steam coming out of it, it's not hot because it's kol shlishi, that's just dumb. Of course it's hot.
So
the question is different. In this hot bowl of soup, which is a kol shlishi, am I allowed to put in croutons? Or does that not constitute cooking on Shabbos? That's a different question.
So why is that a problem?
What's not a problem?
Why isn't when halachic reality clearly goes against the reality that's obvious to all, and it makes it look very silly to the outside observer, why isn't that a problem?
I will answer. Because we as Jews live, in my opinion, on two floors of a house. The first floor is for human beings, like all the rest of the human race. We live in a world. If there's an epidemic going around, then we're going to get it as everyone else is if we're not immune to it. So, case scenario, recently we all know what happened with vaccinations and whatnot. If you weren't vaccinated against a certain disease, you got it. Whether you're Jewish or not Jewish, it makes no difference. If you and in that reality, you're going to get sick. If you're living in a place, in a building, in which the building topples down, and everyone, unfortunately, gets hurt, you're going to get hurt too. You're in that building. That's the first floor. The second floor above it is, we live as Jews, which is what we call a life of Kedusha, a life of sanctity. So ultimately, any time a Jew walks around, it's like he has two hats, or she has two hats. The first hat is, I'm a human being, like the rest of the human race. And the second one is, I'm Jewish. It's a case scenario. If tomorrow morning they come up and they say, we have found a pill that cures cancer, I promise you, we will be dancing in the streets. And the non-Jewish world will be dancing in the streets. And I believe we will be dancing with the non-Jews. Thank God we found the cure for cancer. There hasn't been such a happy day since they found penicillin. Correct? Doesn't make a difference if you're Jewish or not Jewish. What do you think? You go into a hospital, they say, first of all, we want to treat you. What race are you? I'm Jewish. Oh, wait, that's a different medical book. I'm going to take it off the shelf. That's a whole different medicine book. You're a human being. Number one. So if there's a cure for cancer, everyone's happy. Number two, we're also Jewish. So if tomorrow morning they come out and they say the price of kosher meat has gone down 50%, who's going to dance in the street?
Seller of that.
The seller won't.
He knows a lot of buyers.
The buyers.
No, there's a lot of buyers.
All the Jews will dance in the street. Will the non-Jews dance in the street? No, because that has nothing to do with them. So we in many ways live in two worlds. As Avraham Havinu said to the B'nai Chet when he bought Marat HaMachpelah. Do you remember the words he used? Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. Ger, I am a stranger amongst you. Toshav, I am a resident. How can you be a resident and a stranger? Imagine filling out a customs card and it says in the top, R, resident, or V, visitor, and you check both. You'll never get out of customs. I'll think you're a nut. The answer is, that's what a Jew does. He lives in two worlds. At the same time, we are human beings like the rest of the human race, and we're also Jewish. So the first floor is for human beings, and the second floor is for Jewish. When you're born in the hospital, they treat you like every baby. Eventually, 8 days, oh, you're a Jewish baby, bris. So, when you look at this sheet, you say, reality is human being. I'm a human being. A human being has certain rules and regulations that we go by. We try to stay away from unhealthy food, not all the time, but most of the time. And ultimately, we try to drive safely, and we try to be good people, and the list goes on and on and on. And there's a halachic reality, which is not the same as the reality. And we gave so many examples, and the list can go on and on and on. And therefore, you asked this morning, why is the list so short? The answer is, it doesn't have to be so short. Take any issue in halacha, and see what the halacha says about it, and ask yourself, realistically, is it here or not? And I'll end with the following example, but I could have ended with other examples. We all know that on Pesach, not allowed to own chametz. Good. If you're not allowed to own chametz, do you mind telling me? How do you get rid of it? So realistically, if it's in your house, do you own chametz? I would say yes. But if you sold it to a non-Jew, and you rented the space in which the chametz is into a non-Jew, and you did all the kinyanim, all the acts of acquisition, because you don't know which one works with the non-Jew, then you don't violate the prohibition of owning chametz on Pesach. But if I ask you, realistically, is the chametz in your house? The answer is, yes, it is. Do you violate Jewish law? No. Those are two separate questions. And when we mix them up, we do damage, both to halacha and to our normal, logical way our heads work. So, this has been a shir, which is exactly what this particular table is about. How does halacha work? And the first thing you have to ask yourself is, what's the reality? The second question is, what does halacha say about it? And not always one jives with the other, and I end the way I began. We know when Pesach is, and we still celebrate 2 days of Yom. Have a good day.
Thank you, Rabbi Shira.
I go back to that. 2 days.